Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Home Class Movie Chat. We are so excited for you to be here
Hey,
today.
hun,
Yes? What?
what about the intro music?
I forgot about that. Here comes the music.
To show you.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Horror Crypt Podcast, episode number 134. And welcome to all the listeners of the other podcast that I happen to do, which is the Home Class Movie Chat. Now, this week's episode is not going to be, you know, I love to do horror, as we all know. This is why you come and listen to the Horror Crypt Podcast every week. But I'm going to be doing a vigilante exploitation film. This was released in 1984. Funny enough, it was actually released in Omaha, Nebraska first, on June 29th, 1984. The budget was $2 million. I've got no idea of what the hell the actual take of this movie was, but by the way the movie is, it wouldn't have been a whole lot. It runs for 93 minutes. Now, you know, right now, you know, you've got a lot of old movies that are now becoming cult classics and stuff like this. And I guess maybe in this regard, this one is, you know, a cult classic, although this film was actually banned in Australia due to its graphic violence and heavily edited for its original release in the United Kingdom by the British Film Board. Well, that's understandable because I found this movie, I've seen this movie before. So before you go chasing off to see if you can find it, well, you know, you can certainly buy it, obviously, on eBay. But one thing you can watch it on YouTube. However, it is so badly edited and so heavily edited that it's really not worth it even, you know, going to have a look at. But what movie am I talking about today? Well, I'm talking about the movie starring Linda Blair. Yes, that one from The Exorcist. This one is called Savage Streets. Now, if you've never heard of this movie, it's okay. I don't think a lot of people really have. But it does actually star our gorgeous woman, Linnea Quigley, who happens to be the sister in this movie of Linda Blair. Now, as I said, this movie is, look, there's really not much to this movie. As I said, it's a vigilante exploitation film. It's not going to be one of those movies you're going to sit there and go, oh my God, this is just the greatest movie ever. I mean, Linda Blair tries to play tough. As far as I'm concerned, it doesn't work. I mean, she tries very, very hard. And look, in the uncut, you know, unedited movie, an uncut movie, you see, put it this way, Linda Blair is very well endowed. And you get to see some titties when she's laying in the bath, which you don't get to see, obviously, on YouTube. But she has a propensity of wearing absolutely no bra, which I'm actually all for. Love it. Absolutely love it. There is a very, very brutal rape and a rape scene and a beating scene. Like, you know, well, we'll get to it anyway. But look, this movie, as I said, it's not going to win any awards for the greatest movie ever. I mean, I think it was almost like Linda Blair had come off of The Exorcist. Then she did Exorcist Part 2, and I don't know whether that had really gone very far. Then she did, like, Roller Boogie, I think it was. And then I think she just decided to dabble into trying to play it tough in this one. Unfortunately, her performance actually won her the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Actress. And unfortunately, I can say, in all honesty, I watched this movie and I can see why she won it. But this movie has become some sort of a cult classic, which I still don't understand it. But, I'm I'm just that person that sits there. I watch these movies so you don't have to. So you don't have to go chasing this movie. If you do, on eBay, you know, it's pretty up there. I mean, it's around about $50 to $70 to buy a Blu-ray copy of this movie. I don't know whether this movie is really worth $50 to $70 to go and buy. So I would probably say don't worry about it too much. But if you do go and watch it, as I said, it's on YouTube, heavily edited. You won't get to see any gratuitous nudity. You won't get to see any titties from Linda Blair. You certainly won't get to see the vicious beating and rape scene of her sister. Spoiler alert. It's just a lot of the kills are so. But you know, we've gone through, you know, some pretty good movies as far as you know, revenge movies. I mean, we've done, what have we got? The Last House on the Left, I think it was. Well, what other one we did? We did another one anyway. We did something. But there are a lot of movies out there that have got good revenge-based movies. This one fails just short of being a good revenge movie, but, you know, well, it is what it is. It's 1984, and as I said, I actually watched this movie in 1990 or something, and I thought back then, oh, yeah, it wasn't too bad. I rewatched it and went, yeah, it is actually bad. It's, as I said, Linda Blair can't play tough, unfortunately. I love Linda Blair, but really, she can't play tough. Look, before we get started on this podcast, if you happen to listen to this podcast through iTunes, I would like to ask you to do me a quick favor. Give a rate and review on iTunes. It really helps me to go up into the order of people looking for horror movie podcasts. I've got a lot of horror movies coming up, a lot that are hit and miss, and some that are absolutely classic. So look, if you want to get in contact with me also, I've got something new happening possibly next year. What I really want to do is I'd really love to have you guys send me movies that you would like me to watch. Now, I can pick hundreds of movies and I can go through hundreds of movies and you basically just have to endure what I watch. But you know what? I'd love you guys to reach out to me and say, hey, Paul, I want you to watch this movie and I want you to review this movie. This is my pick. I want you to watch it. You must watch it and review it. And I will be very, very happy and very glad to do that. So if you want to get in contact with me, it's horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. And just reach out to me and just say, listen, this is what I want you to do. This is the movie that I'm suggesting you watch, and I'll go and watch it, review it, and that'll happily be your podcast for the week. Look, before we get started on this podcast, however, we've got to listen to the trailer, so sit back and relax, because here is the revenge movie, Savage Streets.
It started off as an innocent prank that erupted in savage violence.
I'm gonna kill him! Look at that, Jake, huh? You think she had fun when she filled her car with garbage, huh?
Shut up, Red.
What are you gonna do about it?
All right, girls.
Your sister, Brenda. The police are doing everything they can. But she shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Charlene, I love her so much. What am I going to do if Heather dies?
We'll meet you guys at the top.
You sure you're not going to hurt her, right, Jake?
Isn't that what I said?
Oh, Brenda, you can't take the whole world on by yourself.
You don't know anything.
Justice for one, justice for all. You get what you give when you broken the law.
For God's sake, it wasn't my fault.
Hey,
what is it?
Wait a minute, man, I don't like it. Something's weird.
What's the matter, boy? Delusioner? What a shame.
We're gonna play a little game, baby. Hey, Red! Red!
Oh, yeah.
She came loaded for bear. No! No!
Oh, my. I missed. And I did so want to see you bleed to death.
Before your crime, your judgment will stand. My back's to the wall. It's out of my head.
Go for your Brenda.
Brenda, baby.
Linda Blair.
these savage streets where the only law is an eye for an eye.
So as I said, if you're really looking for the meaning of life in this movie, you're just not going to get it. Unfortunately, it is what it is. But it was enjoyable enough that it sent me 93 minutes to sit there and just, you know, tune out. But as I said, I've seen the original uncut version. It is way graphically more violent than the cut version, obviously, for obvious reasons. So the movie opens up where we're seeing these group of girls walking down Hollywood Boulevard, and it takes for fucking ever. Like, it just takes forever for these girls to walk down. Now, what I find very interesting is that we're not introduced to anyone at this present time, but we're watching Linda Blair walking down Hollywood Boulevard with all these girls around her. It's nighttime, but she is wearing dark sunglasses, so she's trying to be very menacing. However, she is wearing no bra whatsoever, so you got the titties hanging out. Not really hanging out, but man, it must be cold on the set because she's got some pointy nipples as we're walking along. And we've also got this young girl who looks very, very innocent. She looks completely out of place in this group of girls. I mean, the other girls have got like skin tight leather pants, and they look like they're just street. I mean, in all honesty, they look like they're street walkers. And this other girl is walking along like she's just come out of a malt shop, you know, in the 50s. You know, she's just very demure and very, she's just completely out of the whole, you know, scenario that I can see. And we're obviously introduced as we go along. We find out that this group of girls are called the Satans, and they are run by this girl Brenda, who happens to be Linda Blair. And we also see the girls Rachel, Stella, Francine, Stevie, and Maria. And accompanying them is Brenda's younger an innocent deaf-mute sister, Heather, played by the wonderful Linnea Quigley. Anyone that knows horror knows Linnea Quigley out of the Return of the Living Dead as Trash. So, believe me, she makes a great... I mean, I think this is almost like her beginning movie career. She's very innocent at this stage of the movie. And as we're walking along, you know, Heather, you know, is very, she's not wise to the world, and Brenda is very, very streetwise. She seems to be very wise to everything that's going on, and Brenda has grown extremely protective of Heather following, as we find out, her father's death. And so the girls are just walking along, minding their own business. And we also get to see these group of guys knowing, or a drug dealing gang called the Scars, and they consist of Jake, who happens to be the leader. We've got Vince, who is this nerdy kid that is trying to fit in with this gang. And we've also got Red and Fargo. And as they're driving along, all these guys are trying. There's a lot. One thing I hate about this movie is there is so much pushing going on. You know, these guys, you know, you've got Jake sitting in the front seat with Fargo, and you've got Vince and Red sitting in the back. And Red is just being an absolute douchebag to Vince. But of course, they're all catcalling these, you know, any girl that they can find on the Hollywood Strip. And they're, you know, making suggestive comments and stuff like that. And they happen to see the Satans walking along the side of the road or along Hollywood Boulevard. And they make an effort to try and maybe get their attention by revving their car and driving close to them and trying to, you know, get them interested in these tough guys in the car. However, unfortunately, Heather happens to walk out into the line of traffic and almost gets run over by these guys, who luckily stop just before they run her over. And of course, this then launches a huge tirade from the girls to the Scars of, you know, just be fucking careful what you've just done.
Stop!
What are you fishing about? I blew my horn.
Her sister's deaf, you asshole.
Hey, look, we're sorry, all right? Apologize, asshole. I said apologize.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry.
You're sorry, huh?
Hey, look, Brenda. We say me and you, we get together, we have a little party, huh? I get some good shit, get high. I mean, the possibilities are endless.
Oh, God.
How does that sound to you?
How does that sound? Let's see. Almost as good as drowning in a pool of vomit.
Yeah. Now, you'd think to yourself that maybe that's enough. You know, you've gone and verbally, you know, attacked these guys, made them to feel very small and stuff like that. You've made your point. You've actually pointed out that you almost ran over my sister. So, you know, and so they've done. They just leave well enough alone. But, of course, you see the girls a little bit later on, and they're walking still along the Hollywood Boulevard, and they're going to what they used to be newspaper stands, and they were looking at some magazines and stuff like that. And as we happen to see that one of the girls happens to see on the corner the scars involved in a drug deal and happens to bring it to Heather's attention of, I wonder what the hell's going on over there.
Check it out. What do you think's going on over there?
Oh, it's your typical all-American dope dealers at work.
I'd love to teach those bastards a lesson.
Hey, somebody should. Hey, Heather, how would you like to go for a nice ride in a convertible?
Good, Brenda. That's good. Good. Yeah, I like that.
Now, like I said, just leave it be. Don't go any further. You've made your point. You've made these guys feel small. Just leave it. But no, Brenda cannot leave well enough alone. Now, you know, in revenge tactics, I don't know how Brenda even thinks this is a good idea. They go and they steal Jake's car, and they basically take it for a joyride, eventually ending up by dumping the car and filling it with garbage and abandoning it on the street. Of course, Jake then gets this whole idea of, like, I am going to exact a huge amount of revenge on you. Now, okay, you know, it's like tit for tat. You made me feel small, then you've gone and trashed my car, then I have to get back some revenge. It's the same old thing that we see time and time again in any revenge movie. There must be revenge. There must be ramifications. Of course, this is when Jake and the other guys, the Scars, go to Brenda's school, and they start stalking the Satans at their school. And as they're trying to get Vince back into the group, because, you know, Vince is one of these naive kids that, you know, he's working for his father and mother in their store, but really his life is taking a downward spiral if he keeps hanging out with the Scars. And this is where Jake is really trying to get him to be more full-time in the Scars and less working for your mother and father. So they happen to go to school, and this was during a time where I guess you could just walk onto school premises at any time you thought, and even if you weren't at school, doesn't really matter, I'll just go to school anyway and pull kids out from class. Well, this is what Jake does. He pulls poor old, He pulls Vince out and out of one of the classes and starts to harass him. And this is where the principal decides that he's going to take it upon himself to talk to the Scars. Now, there is a triggering word in this. We don't use this word anymore, so please don't. I'm trying not to offend you, but there is. But remember, it's 1984. They use politically incorrect speech. So there is one coming that is politically incorrect. I'm sorry, but it was part of this movie that you have to listen to. But this is the confrontation between the principal and the rest of the Scars when they pull Vince out from his class.
Get the hell out of your class!
Who the fuck is this asshole?
Vince! What are you doing with these guys?
He's sick, man. You're bringing them home.
You sick, Vince?
Yeah, man, he's got the clap.
He's burning up.
Go fuck an iceberg. I don't want to see any of you guys around my schoolyard. You or any of your scum.
Oh, man, who the fuck are you? The principal?
That's right. And as for you, Vince, you want to trash your life, go ahead. But do it on your own time, not mine. You hear that?
Yes, sir.
Now, why don't you take your faggot asses out of here before I feed into the cops?
As I did say, there was a triggering word there. I do apologize for including that in the recording, but unfortunately it was part of it, so I couldn't really edit it out. But as we're seeing that, you know, Vince is now getting further and further into this gang, but really Jake's whole mission to go to the school is to still hunt down Brenda and the other girls. And it's at this stage that Red happens to break away from the group because they see that poor old Heather, the deaf girl, is walking into the gymnasium, because this is where Brenda is currently doing some sort of, I guess, calisthenics or something. It doesn't seem to be very, very strenuous. So Brenda encourages, you know, Heather just to sit down, wait for her. You know, once this class is done, I need to go and change, have a shower, then I'll come back. So we see that, you know, this whole thing happens, that Heather is sitting there waiting for Brenda and just keeping to herself. And we also see that Brenda gets into a bit of an argument in the girls' locker room with another girl who claims to that her boyfriend is starting to hit on Brenda. And Brenda's like, for God's sakes, I've got no interest in this guy whatsoever. Just leave me the fuck alone. And of course, it starts with a big argument and then a fight. And then, of course, poor old Brenda ends up by being hauled into the principal's office with the possibility of getting suspended if you don't shape up and calm down. Of course, this whole thing is going on while poor old Heather is still sitting in the gymnasium waiting for Brenda to come out. And it's, of course, at this stage as we see that Red comes into the gymnasium and starts to befriend her and, you know, tries to gain her trust. And, you know, there's poor old, there's little Heather, and she's not doing a whole lot of stuff except she's trying to, because she can lip read a little bit, but she's trying to communicate, of course, with Red. And Red is, you know, starting to learn some sign language from Heather. And this is where Red says to her, have you ever kissed, you know, because, you know, she asks a couple of questions, and then he says, well, I've got a question for you. Have you ever kissed a guy before? And she says, well, yes, I have. And he goes, oh, who? And she writes down father, and he goes, oh, your father, huh? Well, where's he? And she writes down that he passed away. And he says, well, that doesn't really count anyway, because that's, you know, kissing your old man. And so he gives her a little kiss on the cheek, and you think, oh, that is really sweet and nice. Of course, then he forces himself on her and kisses her very aggressively. And of course, she stands up and runs, you know, away from him to say, get the hell away from me, I want nothing to do with you, and starts running towards, obviously, an exit where it's unfortunately blocked by Fargo. She runs the other direction to try and get out of the gymnasium, and this is where Vince and Jake happen to be standing on the other side of the door and push her back into the gymnasium. Now, it's at this stage we see that she is dragged into, I guess, would be a toilet block, a male toilet block, and she is trying to scream. We all know what's going to happen, but she is trying to scream at the top of her lungs, and of course, being deaf and, you know, unable to call out for help, she is viciously beaten, brutally beaten, I should say, and viciously gang raped by the guys. Of course, they just leave her unconscious in the locker room. And of course, we also see that they are pushing Vince onto Heather. Like, you know, Red, you know, rapes her first. Jake has a go. And of course, Fargo was going to do the next one. And of course, they're like, no, this is Vince's, it's Vince's turn, you know. And so they really push him into this situation. It's almost like all for one, one for all. If we go down, you're going to go down with us. And Vince is very standoffish. He doesn't want to do this. This is way out of control. But of course, you know, yeah, he wants to be part of the group. And of course, he does end up by viciously raping poor old Heather. It's this stage that Fargo finishes up raping her as well. We then see the next scene where the girls from the Satans and waiting for Brenda are all standing in the gymnasium calling out to Heather. Of course, one of the girls goes, well, hang on, why are we calling out for Heather? She's deaf. She couldn't answer us even if she wanted to. And one of the girls, Stella, happens to walk away into... Now, I first thought it was a male locker room, so why would she be going into a male locker room? But it just seems, obviously, that it's just a generic locker room, because if she was in a male locker room, she wouldn't go looking in there anyway. So Brenda comes into the gymnasium, and they're like, okay, well, so where is Heather? We don't know where she is. There's her stuff sitting on the bench. And of course, at this stage that Stella runs out screaming at the top of her lungs to call to Brenda, we find out that unfortunately, after her brutal beating and gang rape, she's hospitalized and she's now in a coma. Of course, later that night, the girls visit the local disco where they all hang out, where they start to talk about the whole thing of what actually happened and who might have seen what.
The cops said Jake and the scars are at school an hour before it happened.
Oh, yes, well, would you bring us another round, Susie, and tell Jack they're on the house. Do you have any idea who did it?
No, but you can sure bet I'm going to find out who did it. She couldn't even scream for help. All I keep seeing is this little girl trying to open her mouth and nothing comes out.
So what's your school going to do about it?
They'll put us in the gym and make some speech. Even the cops are a bunch of pussies. It's up to us to make things right.
Right.
I'm gonna get up.
Damn right. Now look, you better be careful, baby. Whoever these dudes are, they don't just play games.
Charlene, what if I lose her?
She's gonna make it, honey. You just gotta believe.
And what, God? I gave up when my father died. Charlene, I love her so much. What am I gonna do if Heather dies?
It's, of course, we're in the disco, and of course, the music was unbearable listening to the old 80s rock and roll. But, of course, the girls are sitting around just having a drink, trying to figure out what they're going to do, and they're being warned, don't do anything, because these guys are going to basically fuck you up if they do. And, of course, Francine, who happens to be pregnant, she goes off to the the bathroom. But, of course, the scars have now entered the disco. And, of course, a fight breaks out after Fargo sexually harasses poor old Francine. Of course, after Francine has been harassed, the girls come over and really make an effort to make it sure that, you know, they know that the scars were the ones that actually raped Heather. Of course, there's no 100% proof. Just because the scars were on the premises doesn't mean they did this. But, of course, you know, put two and two together, there's a good chance it's come out to four. We also find out that Francine is actually getting married, and she has to go for a dress fitting. So she goes to this dress fitting. Now, you know, it seems to be that I'm actually going really fast on this movie, and I'm not trying to go fast on it because this is how fast this movie goes. It just starts, keeps going, and then ends abruptly, and that is it. You know, there's really no storyline to this movie. There's no depth of the movies. You're not really going to be caring very much about the characters other than Heather. You'll definitely care about Heather because, you know, she certainly didn't deserve what happened to her. And as I said, Brenda, poor old Linda Blair, the only thing you can really, you know, she's got a great idea of trying to get revenge, but in all honesty, she just can't play tough. I love her, but she just can't play tough, unfortunately. So we're seeing that Francine has gone to have her dress fitting with one of the girls, and the girl happens to be Stella. Stella goes with her. And, of course, she ends up by having to... Stella has to go somewhere, so Francine is just being left to her own devices having this dress fitting. We see that she leaves the dress store, and she's walking along the street, and, of course, then she is suddenly stalked by the scars, who end up by chasing her through an industrial section of the city. And as we're going along, you know, Vince is saying to Jake, you know, you're not going to do anything to her, are you? You're just going to scare her. And he's like, you know, I'm not going to do anything. You know, Vince, I promise I won't do anything. We're just going to scare her. That's all. So they do a lot of running in this movie to chase poor old Francine, who is running along with her wedding dress, you know, in a box, and she's just hoiking it around trying to get away from the scars. Of course, we unfortunately see that she's cornered on the top of a spanning bridge overlooking the Los Angeles River. And, of course, she does happen to attack Jake, who doesn't take too kindly to this. So he picks her up and throws her off of the bridge, and unfortunately kills her in the process. Now, this is where the only member, Vince, happens to be absolutely enraged about the crimes that they've committed, and he decides that he actually has got remorse, and he keeps saying to Jake, you know, don't do it, Jake, don't throw her off, don't throw her off. And, of course, unfortunately, Jake doesn't listen to him and throws her off anyway, and, of course, as I said, she does get killed. And this is where he decides he wants to cut ties with the scars and just starts legging it out of the situation. However, he does go to Brenda's sister Heather's hospital bed, and is standing there and basically confessing that it wasn't his fault. The guys pushed him onto her, and I didn't mean for that to happen. I didn't want it to happen. They made me, this sort of situation. And of course, Brenda encounters Vince, who's apologizing to the comatose Heather in her hospital room. And that night, Brenda decides that she's going to go and confront Vince at his house at knife point. And he admits that the scars have murdered Francine. We also find out, obviously, we know that Francine was pregnant. So, you know, you haven't just killed one person, you've killed two. So, seeking vengeance, a very enraged Brenda visits a weapons store. Now, this was foreshadowing at the beginning of the movie, because at the beginning of the movie, the girls are walking down Hollywood Boulevard and they come across an army supply store. And we see that there is bear traps that she looks at, and there is a crossbow that she looks at as well. So that's sort of like, I wonder. Well, Brenda goes to the weapons store where she, wow, would you have seen this coming? She purchases the crossbow and several bear traps, and she ventures into a sparsely populated section of the city where she locates the scars near an abandoned, near their abandoned textile workshop. Or they've got like a warehouse that is right next to a textile workshop. So I guess they're just leasing this warehouse. And so Brenda taunts Red and Fargo, luring them into the warehouse. And now, I don't know about you. Now, if you've got a hot chick standing there and she is saying that, you know, you're getting me all hot and bothered and, you know, you need to come and make things right with me. But she's holding a crossbow and she's got arrows that are attached to a belt hanging from her belt. Would you really go in and try and do anything? There's a good chance she's going to go and fuck you up. So really, I don't know about this whole situation of you going into there. And even one of the guys, who was it? Can't remember who it was. Red says to Fargo, you know, I really don't like this. Something feels really off to me. It's like, yeah, you think? She's holding her crossbow. She's got arrows. And we raped her sister. And we've also killed her best friend. So do you think maybe that she's out for revenge? But of course, you know, as they say, the little head thinks for the big head. So we see that Red and Fargo go in there to possibly, well, Brenda taunts them as to say, you know, I'm all hot and horny and you got to come and help me. So she's really getting them to come into the warehouse. And of course, she ends up by killing Fargo by shooting him through the neck with the crossbow, and before dispatching Red by snapping a bear trap over his throat. And so it's like, oh, okay. And this is how quickly it happens, because the kills are so quick that, you know, you barely have enough time to really, you know, get the suspense of what's going to go on. You know, where's she going to go? I mean, the kills are pretty decent. I mean, you know, snapping a bear trap over this guy is pretty intense, and this guy getting an arrow through his neck and killing him is pretty intense too. But you know, there's really not enough drama, and there's not enough, you know, tension on this situation. You know, she's hunting them, they're trying to get to her so they can have sex with her, and she's luring them further and further and deeper into this textile warehouse. But you know, by the time she lures them in, it's over and it's done, and that's the kill. It's like, wow, that was really quite a non-event sort of thing. So we see that Jake arrives he arrives after he ends up by killing Vince in a nearby alley by striking him with the car, because Vince has said, I'm out of here, I'm leaving. And you do see that Vince is actually leaving town. But of course, before he ends up by leaving town, of course, to get revenge on him leaving the gang, Jake ends up by running him over with the car. So we see that Jake ends up back at the warehouse and is basically calling to the guys, yeah, come on, open up the door, I want to come in. Of course, they don't do it, so he pulls up the roller shutter, or the roller door, only to find Fargo and Red's corpse in the warehouse. And you can see that you've got the bear trap around poor old Red, and you got Fargo with an arrow through his neck. Of course, then we hear that the Brenda is now taunting Jake, and Jake's, you know, armed himself now with a handgun. And we don't know where she is, but he decides to fire blindly into the dark. Hits absolutely nothing, but of course, he ends up by getting an arrow into both thighs. So that, you know, immobilizes him. Then the last the last thing we see is that Brenda comes out from the darkness with a crossbow and fires another arrow, and we think that it's going to go through his head, but of course she just gets him to the side of where he's leaning, so it actually doesn't hit him at all. And she then taunts him and says, "Oh wow, I've run out of arrows, but you know, stay here, I've got some more in the car." So she goes over to get some more out of the car, but of course we see that he starts to go towards her to chase her down, and she goes through this gate, locks the gate, or you know, locks to the best of her ability, and jumps in the car. Now Jake gets to the gate, opens the gate up, and obviously he doesn't see. This is pretty good. This is pretty good, you know, foreshadowing. Is if he was going to go through this gate the way that she'd set it up, because she'd set up this little trap where, as he stands into this circular, I guess, chain, she starts the car, accelerates, and then it wraps around his ankles and pulls him up. So now he's virtually hanging upside down. And so now, you know, Brenda is now decides she's going to torture the defenseless Jake by stabbing him with a hunting knife. But of course, he manages to set himself free and starts attacking her. Of course, Jake then chases Brenda around the place, and she ends up by going into this paint store. And of course, the store's burglar alarm is going off, and Brenda is trying to get out of the front door. And you know, Jake's you know slowly making his way towards her because he's going to kill her. He doesn't have any bullets, but hey, I'll find out some way of doing it. And he had already strangled her at one stage, but that didn't work because she managed to break free. But of course, as he's getting close to her, she happens to see that some of the paint says flammable on it. We all know where it's going to go, so there's no big surprise. So he comes around the corner and happens to say her name. She throws a can of paint all over him and sets him alight. Now, the full body burn that we see in this scene is really, I don't know. It doesn't work for me because you can see that there is a guy wearing a very large suit, and he's also got a wig that he's put onto his head that looks absolutely nothing like Jake's. But you know what? It's 1984. We've got to come to the idea that, yes, this is actually real. And so we see that he is now burnt to a crisp and is being killed. Of course, we see the police arrive as the engulfed Jake stumbles out of the store and dies. Now, Brenda is standing along the side along the side of the door, looking at him burning, and the cops are looking at her. I think there's some questions that's going to happen, maybe, but this is the unrealistic part of the movie, because the next scene we see, and it's basically sometimes later, Brenda and Heather and the surviving member of the Satans visit Francine's grave, and of course Brenda is standing there with the girls. And this is where one of the girls, I can't remember her name, here it is, Stella, happens to make a comment about what has gone on and what's transpired.
It's just not fair. It's so damn just. And even if there were, we couldn't bring Francine back.
But at least she knows. We made things right.
No, Brenda. You made things right.
Now, of course, in this scene, we are hearing that they're all standing around her grave and talking about it. And, you know, we've got Heather now. We don't know how long this has been because Heather looks like she's completely fine. She's got no scars. She's got no injuries whatsoever. It looks like that Brenda has certainly calmed herself down because she looks like that she's now dressed to go to the PTA meeting. But I like how, you know, Stella says, you know, you made things right. Well, I think there are some questions that we need to ask. Like, you've just murdered Three people. I don't think you're going to be sitting there or standing there at a person's gravesite saying, well, we made things right. I think the police have got some things to discuss with you. Maybe the possibility that you're going to get three life sentences, or maybe you'll get the death penalty. But I don't think you're going to be standing there having a great time over Francine's grave saying, well, at least she knows we made things right. Yeah, we did. You did. You certainly did make things right. You've killed three people. And so I think that maybe the realism of this scene is sort of very, very questionable. But as I said, after the end of this this scene, we're hearing the 1980s music come up. The movie then goes black. And that is the end of Savage Streets. Now, as I said, there is not much to this movie. If you are looking for the meaning of life, if you're looking for a movie that's going to just transcend time and space, if you're going to sit there and go, oh my God, that was awesome. Look, I guess the unedited version is very, very in your face, very graphic, very brutal. But remember, it is the 1980s, and they were still testing out the way movies should be. I love the 80s. I love a lot of the 80s. A lot of the 80s movies are fantastic. We all grew up with the great movies that the 80s have to offer. But sometimes you see that these things like the cult classics, so-called cult classics, and you sit there and say, well, I don't know exactly if I would call this a cult classic. As I said, Linda Blair, you know, she's really trying her hardest to make it plausible that she's this tough girl, but it just falls flat. But look, on a scale of 0 to 5 buckets of blood, 0 being how do I get the last 93 minutes of my life back, to 5, it was a perfect movie and I'd watch it all over again. I'm not going to revisit this movie anytime soon. This is actually a 2 out of 5 for me. Unfortunately, because I'm with all the horror movies that I've actually seen, I'm starting to get more of an appreciation of a storyline. And there is really not a storyline to this movie other than the fact that I need to have revenge on the fact that you raped and beat my sister, which is a great revenge story. We've seen it time and time again in other movies, but I think other movies did it better than Savage Streets. But look, as I said, if you want to go and watch it, it is heavily edited on YouTube. You can go and buy it, obviously, at eBay, but you're going to pay quite a considerable amount of money for that movie. So I don't know. It's up to you. If you can find it cheaper, by all means, and if you want to watch it, go ahead. But you've been warned. Look, before we get finished on this podcast, we have to do Paul's Fun Facts. So as usual, there are some very interesting little fun facts of this movie. So Arrow Video released the movie on DVD fully uncut for the first time in the UK in 2011. Think, oh, awesome, fantastic, we can find it. No. However, many of the copies were destroyed in a fire at a warehouse during the London riots in the same year. This DVD is now considered rare and is highly sought after by collectors. So there we go. It's very, very hard to find. When you do find it on eBay, you are going to be paying through the nose for this one. Now, during the film's premiere in New York City, we see that Linda Blair was actually making an appearance at both the RKO Warner and the Lowe's Auditorium to meet fans and give away soundtrack albums and photos. That would have been awesome in her heyday to actually get to meet her at this premiere. I'm just wondering whether she stuck around or whether she sat there and went, oh boy, I shouldn't have done this movie. This was not a good career choice. Now, the UK must have been, it was very, very strict on this movie because the BBFC, the British Board of Film Classification, demanded a total of 24 minutes worth of cuts to the film before its release in the UK. At the time, they had virtually zero tolerance to sexual violence and the use of a crossbow. I can understand zero tolerance to sexual violence. But seriously, the use of a crossbow, I mean, seriously, all she did was she fired three arrows. But that's it. I don't understand why you'd be so upset about the use of a crossbow. But, well, all right, okay. Now, this is really interesting with Linnea Quigley. So during a 2004 interview, she was asked if she was very nervous to appear nude in front of a lot of people during her rape scene, knowing that the whole world might see her or if she found it liberating. So she responded and she said, I don't find nudity liberating at all. I had a hard time every time I was required to be nude in this or other films, since the cast and crew all have to try to get on set like they've never seen a naked woman before. So I always tried to have a closed set. But in another interview, Quigley, who had been nude in most of her films since the beginning of her career, she said that nudity is no big deal and wondered why people freak out about it. So it's really interesting. From 2004, she doesn't find it at all liberating. And now she's saying, you know what? I've been nude so many times in movies. It doesn't matter. It's not a big deal. Come on, Linnea. Give us one or the other. I don't know. You're sort of like giving conflicting answers on that one. But that's a very interesting little thing that she actually said about her nude roles, because we always find that she's always nude in some movie that she does. And just one final one before we finish off this podcast. Now, if you go looking for this soundtrack, well, that one is going to be very hard for you to find, with the exception of a rare independent edition by Turbo Productions in 2005. The soundtrack has never been released on CD. So if you can find the soundtrack of this movie, good luck to you, because it's never, ever been released on CD. I don't know where it could be, but somewhere, someone's got someone. I mean, they might have a copy somewhere, but I don't know. Like, I can't find it anyway. And I do some pretty heavy digging to try and find movies with soundtracks. So, yeah, I can't find this one. So there we go. There is no release of this movie on a CD. So there we have it. Look, before we go, I really want to thank each and every one of you for coming to visit me, the Horror Crypt Podcast, and thank you very much to those of you who are listening through the Home Class Movie Chat. I promise I'm going to drag Kat back into the studio, and we will do another podcast for you next week, and it will be something completely different than this one. But I really want to thank everyone for coming to visit me, the Horror Crypt Podcast. Guys, you know, as I said to you before, I am very happy for you to reach out to me, horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. Send me some ideas about what movies you'd like me to do, because I've got a list of movies, you know, as long as my arm or even longer, that I'm actually planning on doing. But I'd really love your input, because I know there are movies out there that I've never seen that you would actually suggest that I would watch. And as I said, I would watch them. Definitely, I promise I'll watch them, and I'll give them a review, and that will be your podcast for the week. So really, I'd really love to have some feedback. So horrorcrypt2022@gmail.com. For everyone else, thank you very much for listening to this podcast. And I will say, like I say every single week, and I'll say it one more time, I will creep you later.
Go fuck an iceberg.